Welcome back to another episode of Your Pocket Nurse, a podcast for student and graduate nurses. I would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the original owners of the land that I am recording on. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hello and welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by Vicky, a registered nurse working in the rural and remote communities as an emergency nurse. So welcome.
Hi, Mel. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thanks for coming on. We've had, you know, obviously being a rural and remote nurse, there's been doing a different type of sort of recording. So hopefully you guys can hear it, you know, just as well as all the other episodes. So in case you're wondering why it might sound a bit different this week. So how are you today?
I'm really good, thanks. I've just had the morning off and I've got an afternoon shift today. I've just come off a run of night.
So yeah.
Six night shifts in the emergency department and a couple of days off and now back into day shift. So yay for me.
They come around so quickly. Are you doing 0.8 or full-time?
Yeah, 0.8 at the moment, yep.
Yeah,
I prefer that.
Yeah, it's definitely a better sort of like work-life balance.
Yeah, it definitely is. I don't think I could ever go back to full-time ever again. I think I dropped down to 0.8 when I started doing my postgraduate studies just for that little bit of extra time to study. And, you know, I said to my boss, oh, I'll go back to full-time when I'm qualified, and I never did. So, you know, that's just the way I prefer to do things.
Yeah. Well, good on you for doing the postgrad with 0.8, because I think a few people, I guess it depends, but some people do it like 0.6 even, because it's like a lot of workload studying as well.
It is. It's a lot of work, and I don't think you realise until you're in it how much work is actually involved in doing a postgrad whilst doing shift work. Like, I think, you know, people who work 9 till 5, I kind of envy in a way, because, you know, you're not finishing late and starting early the next morning and sort of putting your body clock out of whack and trying to fit in all your studies as well as, like, your social life and things like that. It's not just work you have to consider, it's everything. So I think it would have been a lot easier for me if I was less than 0.8, but that's what I chose to do at the time, thinking that was the right thing. And, yeah, I was pretty exhausted by the end of it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think I'm like, I always thought, like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do postgrad, and I still want to, but I just think, you know, trying to find a time in your life where you're like happy to just work and study basically all the time.
Yeah. Wait till you know, got a bit of experience under your belt as well, and know which area you're going to commit to. And then, because, yeah, it is a lot of work, but, you know, it is worth it in the end. You gain so much knowledge and skills, and you get that piece of paper, and it's something to be proud of and to take with you everywhere.
Yeah. I know, definitely need to decide on an area, because it is so expensive as well to do postgrad.
It can be. Check it on the hex, it'll be right.
Yeah, exactly. So I usually start off with three questions that I ask everyone so we can get to know you a bit better. So
sure.
Why did you become a nurse? And if you weren't a nurse, what job do you think you'd have?
That's a really good question. I don't really know exactly why I became a nurse. There's no one like nursing medical within the family or anything like that. And it was purely a decision I sort of made at like in year 12. Like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I doing with my life, you know? But I didn't always want to be a nurse, actually. I wanted to be a microbiologist or marine biologist, because I really loved biology. In senior high school, and I did quite well at it, actually. So I was like, oh, of course I'm going to do something that involves biology. I'm going to work in a lab or, do marine biology or something like that. And I was chatting to my careers teacher at the time about it. So this was, end of year 12, and she said to me, no, you don't want to do that, Vicky. You're way too social and, you know, you need to work with people. You don't want to be in a lab on your own. That just wouldn't suit you. And it really stuck with me since. I sort of walked away from the office thinking, oh, yeah, she's right. Like, that. I don't think I can do that, actually. So I'm thinking, well, what the hell am I going to do? What sort of job involves biology and working with people? And, you know, it shouldn't give me really any other path to look down. I sort of went off with that thought. So I took upon myself, you know, back then, you know, I think it was like a massive book that you could flip through and try and find, you know, what prerequisites, you know, you'd done you know, your subjects in year 12 and what you could do with them. And nursing came up and I was like, oh yeah, biology. Yep, you need that as a prerequisite to get into nursing. And I sort of thought, oh yeah, nursing. And then, you know, it was in the back of my mind. And then I started to pay a bit more attention to All Saints on TV. And I remember Georgie Parker performing CPR on an episode. And I remember looking at that scene of her doing CPR on the bed while they're wheeling this bed through the emergency department. I thought, yep, I want to be that. Yeah. I want to be doing that. I want to learn how to do that, and that's going to be me. I'm going to be Georgie Parker off All Saints. And then so here I am. And I think if I didn't do nursing, I probably would be in the lab with, you know, knee-deep in petri dishes growing fungi and parasites. I'm not sure. Or out in the ocean looking at starfish. I don't know, but I'm glad I chose nursing. Like, I am very social, and I enjoy working with people, so I think that suits me very well. Glad I made that decision.
Amazing. That sounds really cool. Like, it's just so interesting to hear about everyone's sort of like story getting into nursing and, you know, why they ended up picking it, because, you know, everyone has various reasons, but we obviously all have the same, you know, passion to be a nurse.
Yeah, it's so true. It is so interesting. And like today, if I was to have a career change, I'm not so sure I'd go into biology or marine biology even now. I'm just like, oh no, I'd probably go into like teaching or something like that, you know, educate the next generation and, you know, and incorporate your nursing into that, you know, teaching sex ed in school and empowering kids and things like that. I think that would be really cool if I was to have a career change. Yeah.
Amazing. I think like a lot of people, I was talking to one of the nurses at work and, you know, obviously during COVID it gets you down, and he was like, oh, to be honest, I think I want a career change. Maybe I want to be a teacher. And I think so many people that are nurses, they'd always also maybe considered teaching. Like, I know I also thought about teaching, but then, you know, definitely, we choose nursing. So it's interesting how that might be another option for nurses.
I think it's that whole concept of, you know, working with people, and, you know, we are you know, we educate our patients and we advocate for them as well, and that's something that teachers do as well, you know, for their students. So it's sort of similar in a way, really.
Yeah. And, like, I suppose, you know, we're educating, you know, students on placement, the next grads coming in, you know, we're always teaching, and it's, like, in our standards that you have to, like, teach, you know?
That's right. We mentor and teach, and, that's it, bring up the next generation of nurses. So it is an important aspect of nursing too.
Yeah. So you're an emergency nurse. Was this always an area you wanted to work in, or is there somewhere else you originally thought you wanted to work in, or is there still another end goal, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think, like I said, watching Georgie Parker on All Saints, I was like, oh, yeah, that's going to be me. That will be me one day. Mm. And then, you know, when I started nursing, I actually found it quite daunting, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, there's some really sick patients out there. How the hell could I, you know, possibly look after these really sick patients? And I sort of became unsure, you know, of which direction I was going to go in. But I still wanted to give it a go. And, you know, you try and get in as a student to do placement, but, you know, that's always very competitive. Mm-hmm. And so is when you're doing your graduate. It's a very popular rotation, and it's, again, very competitive. So I sort of accepted that, and I did all of my placements were like med-surg, and my grad year was med-surg as well. And I loved it. And I was like, yeah, this is what I was born to do, you know. This is amazing. I was on a neurosurgery ward at St. Vincent's Hospital in Melbourne, the public hospital. So I was there for my grad year, and I loved it. The nurses there were amazing. It was, you know, we're dealing with some really complex patients post, you know, some really complex, you know, spinal and brain surgeries, and that really interested me. And you know, all the nurses there had done their postgrads, and, you know, the ANUMs there were amazing. And I thought, oh, that's what I'll do. And that sort of changed, you know, you get exposed to different things and have different experiences, and you're like, you revert back to what I reverted back to what my original goal was, you know. So I had the opportunity to get into emergency nursing, and I took it, and I've absolutely loved it ever since. And It is my chosen specialty. I feel like it's my niche. It's like I've found my place in nursing, and I do love it. And I want to pursue further in it. Like, I'm at the moment working on becoming a nurse educator. So I'd love to work in an emergency department somewhere and be a nurse educator, either for an emergency department or in general at a hospital, working with undergrads. That would be amazing. So, and that's the great thing about nursing. There's always these constant opportunities and doors and pathways you can go down. So, you know, I feel like I haven't reached my full potential or all my goals, you know, even though I've done my postgrad and everything in emergency. I feel like, you know, all right, well, what's next? So I think an education role would be really cool.
Amazing. That's good. I think a lot of people that I've interviewed, because most of the people I interview on my podcast, it's just easy to find, but they have Instagram accounts like yours. Yours is called Rural First Aid.
Yeah.
And I find so many of them are interested in becoming educators. So it must be a thing about, you know, having an Instagram and, you know, educating people through that and then wanting to be an educator on the floor as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really good platform to share your nursing journey as well. So I've got two pages. I've sort of got one that's like my life, like here I am travelling, doing this. And then I've created this Instagram page, and I've only created it sort of this year because I was like, where's this nursing journey going to take me? Like, you know, I've got all these ideas and aspirations and I'm going to put in all this hard work, so I'm going to dedicate a page to it and to see where it goes, where it takes me. So that's what sort of happened there, and I sort of, yeah, keep all like nursing related posts on that one and then all the fun like life sort of stuff on the other one. So it's good.
Yeah, amazing. No, it's really interesting because obviously, as we'll get into it, but I'm sure we'll learn a lot more about rural and remote nursing, and it's probably very different to anything I've experienced and many other people in sort of like metro hospitals or even regional hospitals. Like, you know, when I was reading, I was like, oh, I've never really thought about that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah. What has been your favorite clinical experience or moment, whether it be back when you were a student on placement or at work?
This is a little hard one to sort of answer because there's been so many like amazing moments and experiences and everything, but I sort of narrowed it down to a really nice story that I have. So when I was working in the Kununurra District Hospital, this must have been about a year or two ago, I'd created the snake bite box grab kit, I guess you could say, for the department because I didn't have one, and you know, snake bites are a common enough presentation in places like the Kimberley. So made up this box, and then we had this phone call saying that there was a five-year-old boy coming in from the community who'd been bitten by a snake. So he arrived, and it was really cool just to implement, you know, what I'd made and educate the staff on the floor. You know, this is what we do in a snake bite situation, this is what the kit's for, this is how you use it, this is the protocol, this is what we're going to do. Implementing that and putting it to use. He was envenomated. So it was the first time I'd ever had to give anti-venom. So he was a really sweet little five-year-old boy. And of course, quite a scary experience too for a five-year-old. Yeah, he didn't quite understand, but he was a really brave kid. And he was, you know, the snake bite wasn't overly obvious too. It was on his toe and like a scratch, you know, like the fang had just sort of scratched the top of his toe. So it didn't even look like what you'd see as a typical snake bite. But he was able to tell us, you know, that he saw a brown snake, and he was able to describe it to us. So when we got the blood work back, and had a discussion with toxicology and everything, and just coordinating, you know, for that patient to come into the resus room, have everything prepared, all the resus equipment, everything, because anti-venom is sort of one of those high-risk medications that you give. And it was the first time for me giving it. And, yeah, that was really interesting. So to, you know, set it all up, give it to him, you know, following, I guess, the protocol and monitoring him, and then afterwards doing the blood work and comparing it to his pre and post anti-venom, just seeing the difference and improvement, and, yeah, if we had not given it to him, he may not have survived. So that was really cool. He was a really sweet kid. He had a really sweet family, and everything went really well. So, yeah, that was really interesting.
Oh, good job. That sounds really interesting because, yeah, I completely, like, I was listening and thinking, oh, gosh, I wouldn't even know what to do for a snake bite. So would you do the blood test first to figure out, like, what snake they've been bitten by, or are you sort of waiting to, like, if the patient knows what snake it's been?
Yeah, it's a little bit complex. So we treat all snake bites the same because nobody's really a snake expert. So even if they say it was a green snake, you know, there's been scenarios where people have been very wrong, you know, identifying the snake that they've been bitten by and ended up dying, or thinking it was a stitch and, you know, ended up dying of, you know, being envenomated and that. So when they come in, you know, your first priority is A, B, C, D, E, but also getting a pressure immobilization bandage on, immobilizing that limb, and you get your blood work and you go from there. So you're looking at the colour profile, things like that, looking for venom-induced consumption, coagulopathies and things like that. So if that's all normal, you take down the bandage, and then after an hour you repeat the bloods. And if they're deranged, well, then you're looking at a potential envenomation. As well as blood work, though, you are looking at clinical signs and symptoms. So typically in brown snake, for example, you do get that bleeding. So they might have bleeding gums, IV line insertion site might start to bleed. A very classic, typical textbook sign of envenomation is extreme pain at the bite site as well. So you can have cardiovascular effects, you can have neurotoxic effects, and that depends on which snake you've been bitten by as to what symptoms and signs you're going to have. So you do your snake bite observations as well.
Yeah.
And you're looking for all those things. So you're looking at it as a big picture. So how the patient looks, you know, how they're presenting, what their signs and symptoms are, what their blood work's doing. And then you're always in collaboration with toxicology experts. And they're going to give you the advice of, yeah, let's go ahead and get the anti-venom. So, yeah, it's all very interesting.
Yeah, very specific sort of area. But do you come across that a lot in the rural and remote areas?
Yeah, you do. And I think it's so important to be prepared, and that's why I was like, we need a snake bite kit.
It would make sense too.
Get on board with what to do, because I think the most important thing with a snake bite is just having that knowledge so you can reassure the patient, you know, knowing what to do so they can feel safe. Because when we think of snake bite, we think, oh, I'm going to die. I think we all sort of associate, you know, snake bites with a very poor outcome, and that's just a natural thing for anyone who gets bitten by a snake. So for me, I think it's really important to make the patient feel safe and to make sure they're in good care. And I think if we educate people, nursing staff and doctors who, you know, come from the city who have not dealt with snake bites, you know, this is our protocol and this is what we do, here's the snake bite box, this is what we're going to do. So when I worked at the Royal Darwin Hospital, I would say it happened weekly at least. And I think in Kununurra for a while there, I think it was happening monthly. So I feel like there was a period where it was happening, quite frequently there for a while. So, yeah, it does happen. And when I worked in the Pilbara, we'd have fly-ins, like the Royal Flying Doctors would have to bring people in if they'd been bitten down the gorges and things like that. And they'd have to come into Port Hedland Hospital and get treated there. And, yeah, it's a very specific process. You have to be so careful about treating and that. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that one. We'll get into more sort of, you know, presentations and things, but can you tell us a bit about your nursing journey? So you've obviously did your graduate year in Melbourne, is that right? And then you've done additional study, and like, how did you decide to work in the rural and remote areas and like do travel nursing and all that?
I think for me it was always an end goal. Like, it's something that I aspired to do. Anyway, so after my grad year at St. Vincent, I actually did a lap around Australia in a caravan for 12 months, and that was really cool. And I was obviously I'd just done my grad year, so I was very junior, And, you know, that trip around Australia really opened up my eyes to, you know, rural and remote regions, you know, places you would never think existed or anything like that. And, you know, you soon learn, God, imagine the nursing staff and what they deal with here. And, you know, it just started to really interest me what would go on in these small clinics. And sometimes I did used to pop in and go, oh, hey, I'm a nurse from Vic, like, just wanted to pop in and see what goes on in here and things like that. And you soon learn, like, God, yeah, you do need emergency experience if you want to work in those smaller places where there's a lot of responsibility, really, on those nurses. So that sort of ignited it, you know. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this would be really cool, you know. And, you know, travelling around Australia was, yeah, just opened up my eyes a lot to it. But on that trip, I just joined an agency and I did 3 months in Perth working in Metro Hospital, sort of like doing pre-op theatre and that sort of thing, and 3 months in Darwin and working in on the wards there as well. And then, you know, when I returned home, I was working in emergency services back in Victoria, in Ballarat. I worked at the Ballarat Health Services for a year. And that was a really good experience. Got really good training there. And then, you know, it took a bit of time off to travel again. Went back to the Royal Darwin Hospital and, yeah, stayed there for a few years and did my postgrad. And I think, you know, the thing that sort of, you know, was driving me to move on and go back out and search that sort of rural, remote area nursing was a bit of burnout, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Big, busy hospital, Royal Darwin Hospital. One big, busy place, I guess, and it does. It takes its toll on you after a while. And I thought, yeah, what else is out there? I don't think I can, you know, continue doing this. You know, I think I need a change. So as much as I loved it, it was also impacting me a little bit, like, you know, the burnout and everything. So I thought, I think this might be my opportunity to sort of go. And I can always come back. That's where I always knew. I'd always be welcome back there because I had, you know, established a really good rapport with the team there and really got my skills up there. Mm-hmm. It was a great process to work through the emergency department and get to where I wanted to be. And that's, yeah, when I decided I'm going to go and go try something else. That's how I got into rural and remote. So I left and I headed west. I decided I was going to do a trip around Australia and go anti-clockwise. So mm-hmm. First track was Port Hedland in the Pilbara. That was really cool. And then I started from there and worked my way down.
Amazing. Yeah. So how did you, like, decide where you wanted to work? Do they send out the contracts to you and you sort of, like, skim through and look at, like, the area, or how does it all work?
Yeah, so I joined an agency and you sort of just asked around, like, always know some nurse friends that, you know, have done agency before and, you know, they recommended I go with Affinity, so I signed up with them and, mm-hmm. yeah, basically they send you a job board and that comes out every week to your email and you sort of just skim through it and you go, oh, yep, that contract looks like it doesn't suit me, you know, the date sound about right, that sounds like it fits in with me, so your email... you sort of get placed with like a case manager, I guess, and they sort of look after you and your contracts and what you want to do and things like that. And, yeah, my case manager sort of arranged that for me. So what happens is you tell them what you're interested in and then they contact the hospital and they, like, say, look, we've got this nurse, this is her resume, she's, you know, ticks all these boxes, da-da-da-da, and they'll either say yes or no. So that's how it sort of works.
Oh, that's cool. And do they often offer, like, accommodation and things like that, or how does that all
work? Yeah, they do, yeah. So in most places, in all the rural remote places, there's always nursing quarters. Mm-hmm. So when I was in Port Hedland, I used to the hospital's in South Hedland and the nursing quarters are in Port Hedland, which is, like, 15 minutes apart. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, these houses, about 6 houses on this little sort of block, and they're really nice actually, and it's like a shared bathroom, kitchen, sort of lounge area, and then there's like 6 bedrooms, so everyone gets their own private lockable room with like a double bed and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's a really good way to make friends as well, because you'll be you know, sharing with other nurses and cooking your dinner together and doing activities and things like that. And, you know, one good thing about Port Hedland is they had a bus service as well. So they actually pick you up in a bus. The orderly will come get you in the bus and take you to and from work every day. So that's really nice. They look after you a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Like, how many sort of years' experience would you say is good before you look into travel and, like, agency nursing?
Look, it depends what you're wanting to do, but most, like, advertise that you need to have at least 2 years' experience.
Mm.
And it depends on what area you want to do. Like, I mean, Port Hedland's got a general ward and a paediatric ward and a maternity ward. So, you know, if you've got some metro experience and, you know, you've got, you know, your skills down pat and everything, like, I mean, you've done your graduate program and then you've had a year after that to even, you know, consolidate your knowledge and skills even further, places like that would snap you up for sure.
Yeah, no, because I'm literally just thinking, like, oh, that sounds so interesting. I think maybe I should do it one day.
Yeah, definitely. Give it a crack. It's honestly an amazing experience. It's just, you know, you can't even compare it to sort of metro tertiary. It's very different. It's, you know, working in a smaller team, you get to really know your team. I noticed, you know, when I was working at Royal Darwin Hospital, you know, you're working on the roster, there's like 200 nurses and, you know, 20 nurses a shift. And, you know, there's some that you never meet, you know, you never see them or you never meet them because it's such a big team. Whereas if you work somewhere really small, like Port Hedland, for example, you really get to know your team quite well, like really, really well, and you become, you know, quite close and good mates. And, you know, if you're working together, they'll be doing everything social together, and it's a really fun way to live.
Yeah. I know, I'm just like thinking it'd be challenging though, you know, and for me as well, I've gotten used to EMR, like all our computer, like all our notes and everything, it's all online. Like we've got these computers and, you know, I don't write patient notes. I can, you know, read the doctor's plans and writing. And I feel like that's what I would be scared about, is going back to paper-based and like feeling not comfortable, because I sort of struggled with that as a student, because I'd look at this drug that the doctor had written and I literally couldn't decipher their handwriting.
Yeah, that's not good, is it? But rural remote's not as backwards as you think. They do have online notes as well.
Yeah.
But you're right, the charts, the medication charts are handwritten.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's no, that can be challenging sometimes, but you just say, oi, can't pick that. Can you please rewrite that?
Yeah,
and
then
you think a bit about it. Yeah,
I know. I'm just like so comfortable at my hospital, and just, you know, like you kind of know the ins and outs of the system and know how to contact the doctor, and you know, we can still page them and stuff, but we have this thing where we like, it's like an inbox, we send them a message and we can add multiple people to the message. It's like, I'm thinking, how did they used to contact doctors, you know, or like a, you know, a physio review or whatnot? Like, it's just so much more accessible and easy.
Yeah, it is. I remember doing that too when I was sort of working in Melbourne and Ballarat. And yeah, it is easy to send a page and all that sort of thing. But yeah, now it's quick phone call to the ED. Hey, can you come up to the ward? I need you right now.
Yeah.
Or pushing the emergency bell, because your med call team is the emergency department staff.
Oh, okay.
So, the doctor's on call, you just give them a ring and they have to jump out of bed and come into the hospital.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So you're never alone. There's always going to be help. There's always an escalation pathway.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
Of course. So do the doctors still round? Maybe we should start with, like, what is, like, a typical day on a rural and remote, like, hospital? Like, maybe a ward in general, and then maybe, like,
ED? Kununurra. So, you know, I was working in Kununurra Emergency Department for 2.5 years, and I used to go down the ward and help quite a bit. But, yeah, like a typical day. So, you know, there's, gosh, I couldn't tell you how many doctors actually work at Kununurra Hospital, but, you know, a good quantity, and they have to do like a rotating roster.
Mm-hmm.
So they will do maybe 2 weeks on the ward, and then they'll do 2 weeks in AD, and that's how they sort of rotate it. So if you're on the ward, so there's usually about 2 or 3 doctors that share the roster down on the ward. Yep, the typical day is just like metro, tertiary sort of thing. You know, doctor will, you know, get the patient list and, you know, sort of sees patients from sickest first, mm-hmm. and work their way down the list, you know, sort of working down each room, going in, reviewing, making a plan, on to the next one, communicating with the nurse in charge, who obviously coordinate discharges and discharge plans and things like that. So it is quite similar in that sense. I guess the thing with the rural and remote setting with like the Kundara ward is it's a bit of a mixed bag on the ward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's paediatrics, it's adolescents, it's maternity, it's psychiatric, it's gen med, it's geriatrics, it's palliative, it's a mix of everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Unless they're not sick enough to be flown by the Royal Flying Doctor Service to somewhere else, they stay on the ward with us, and it ranges from, like I said, neonates to geriatrics. So it is a mixed bag, so it is very busy. The nurses do an amazing job on the ward there.
Yeah, as they would, because it's such like obviously a big age range, and you know, just knowing, even like obviously they would know it now, like it's their bread and butter, but you know, all the different OBS ranges, all the different clinical presentations, and you know what to look out for, because you know it's very different. Even like neonates to peds is very different, and then you know,
that's right,
peds to adults, like very, it's all very different. You know, we're all humans, but we're still different. Yeah. You know,
that's right. Yeah, it is really quite challenging sometimes, especially when you've got such a, you know, you might have a psychiatric patient and, you know, a palliative patient and a couple of paediatric patients, and that might be your patient load for the day. So it's a lot to take on and to take in and everything. But as long as you support each other and give each other the help that you need, I think they do a pretty good job.
Yeah. What would the ratio sort of be like?
It should be the same as what it should be in metro. So what is it meant to be, 1 to 4 usually,
yeah.
isn't it? But yeah. sometimes it can be due to short staffing issues. It has been a lot higher than that. So yeah. sometimes 1 to 6. But yeah, if we've got adequate staffing, it should be 1 to 4. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. And I had one more question. I completely forgot. It was about what you were talking about. It was, do you have midwives as well there, or would you also be expected to, like, I don't know anything about pregnant people.
Yeah, we do.
You know?
We do have midwives. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a maternity sort of wing of the hospital, or of the general ward. It's part of it. And then separate, just out from the double doors to the side, there's the birthing labour suites. We've got 2 of those. So we do have a midwifery service. We've got antenatal mm-hmm. clinic, mid and all that, community midwife as well for postnatal care. And we're, meant to be staffed for 24/7 mid. I guess one pretty cool thing about working rural remote is you do have that opportunity to upskill. So most of the ward girls and RCD girls and guys have to do the neonatal resuscitation course for the NNR, because on a night shift, if there's a delivery, because there's only one midwife on the night shift, one of the RNs has to go in and assist the midwife.
Yeah.
So you have to have NNR to be able to do that. So that's something I've been lucky enough to do. I've done that course twice now in Kununurra, and I've assisted in 2 births. So that's pretty cool, because I hadn't really seen vaginal birth before.
Yeah.
And that's something that I have seen and assisted with, and yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, both went extremely well, so there was no neonatal resus required from me, which was fantastic. But it is something that would be expected of me if that was to happen, because if there was, you know, if the mum crashed, the midwife needs to be with the mum, and the reason why the nurses are doing their NNR is so that we can take over the baby's care in those sort of scenarios. So, yeah, of course, you'd be reading all the doctors and nurse managers and everyone else coming in, but in that initial, you know, incident, that's what you'd be expected to do. So,
yeah, amazing. It seems. Yeah, it just seems like, you know, you obviously, you'd learn so much and it would, like, benefit your career if that's what, you know, people are interested in to pursue, you know, and sort of know a bit about everything. It seems like, you know, working in, you know, the rural and remote communities would be the way to go.
Yeah, it is. It's a really great way, to learn different skills and to get a broad range of a lot of things, really. Kanara... was really great for education and learning a lot of things really. But we had a great education team there, which I became a part of, and we had a great educator there, Jane, and she coordinated adult advanced life support, pediatric advanced life support, and the neonatal resuscitation course as well. So she was teaching all three of those courses and was making sure every nurse that was at the Kununurra Hospital was going through these courses and doing all those courses so that everyone was adequately trained for everything. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. No, it's really it's such just a different, like, I'm just listening in awe. I'm just thinking, like, it's so different to, like, what I do, you know. I go into work, you know, have my one sort of specialty, and, you know, I would never expect to end up with a, you know, a child on my ward or anything. It's just,
yeah.
It's cool, but
yeah, it's a bit of an eye opener. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting. I follow a few travel nurses on Instagram. A few in US, travel nursing is very popular, but I find in Australia, travel nursing is more popular for regional, remote, and rural communities as compared to we never have a travel nurse or an agency nurse really arrive on my ward. You know, it's all just normal floor staff, but. Yeah, it's just
so true.
So interesting to see where they go, and so many of the times it's then they have a little holiday and they're at the beach and, you know, exploring and, you know, seeing Australia and everything. It's just such an amazing way to sort of incorporate, you know, a love for travel and working as a nurse.
Yeah, it is. It's actually, I feel very lucky to be able to do what I'm able to do. Very lucky.
Yeah. Is it realistic for a partner to come along for this journey, or is it something that you would suggest is more of a solo thing and you kind of do long distance if you have a partner, or, you know, what does your partner do if he comes or she comes around with you?
Yeah, no, it is realistic. Not all places are able to accommodate for partners. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, if you're staying with the nurses' quarters, you can't have your partner in there. It's just purely for the nurses, or sort of shared accommodation. But in saying that, some places will accommodate for partners, so they'll get you your own self-contained unit or a hospital house or something like that. It just depends where you go. So you just have to do your research and find out. So just talking to your your agency, casework, and being hey, I want to go here. You know, what's the accommodation like? Do they accommodate for couples, or is it just nursing quarters? Or and you'll find most places are getting better at accommodating for couples and for dogs as well. That used to be a bit of an issue. There's a lot of places that aren't able to accommodate for dogs, and a lot of people are travelling with their dogs. So that's changing, I've noticed. Kununurra can certainly accommodate for people with dogs and boyfriends and whatever. So, yeah, before we came to Esperance, that was one of my questions. I said, you know, what's the accommodation like? I was obviously bringing my partner now, and they were able to put me up in a house. Yeah, so I'm pretty lucky. So it is doable, but you won't be able to go to every place. Like I said, it's not going to be available to every single place you go to, but most places, yeah. Definitely. And my partner, he is a tradie, so when we rock up to a town, we've done this a few times now, and he can find work almost in anything. He's done maintenance work. He's, he's a plumber by trade, so obviously he's picked up some plumbing work, but he's also done maintenance and construction and all sorts of things. So it's pretty handy a nurse and a tradie travelling together, it works well actually.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, my boyfriend, he's a tradie too. He's like doing his electrician apprenticeship. So I'm thinking, oh, maybe that could work out for us as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, 100%.
Amazing. And going back to working to like in one of the hospitals, would it be possible to sort of work in a facility without resus and triage qualifications and sort of ED experience? Is that something that it can be offered once you get there? Or
yeah.
What's your sort of take on it?
Tanana, for example, you've got the general ward there. So if you don't have emergency skills, you obviously won't be able to work in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. So it's free to have those skills before you go there, before you work in an emergency department. It's good to come with all of that already behind you and bring those skills to the facility because, it is a small sort of a hospital where they rely heavily on, skilled nurses to operate the emergency department and things. I don't have the capacity to train in a lot of places, like really small rural remote places, but they say that doesn't mean you can't go there and not bring value to the team. You know, I think all nurses bring value to the team and, if you've got a med-surg background, you're going to be so much appreciated on the ward. Or if you've got theatre experience, we've got an operating theatre there, so if you want to go and transfer your skills over to the operating theatre, that's also an option as well. There's so many options. And no doubt, if you're working on the ward and there's an emergency in the emergency department, you'll be coming down to help us anyway. So,
yeah,
it does work like that. And there's a lot of, regional places that aren't just an emergency department. They do have, a general ward and a paediatric ward and an operating theatre as well. But if you're going really remote, it's generally purely emergency, and that's where you need to have those sort of triage and resus skills behind you.
Yeah.
For sure.
Good to know. And I suppose when you do look at contracts and things, you'd able to see what sort of jobs and positions are on offer and, find something that suits you. So
yep, you do. You look at the job board and you're like, oh yep. Yep, Kamnara's looking for nurses on the ward, theatre, emergency, take your pick sort of thing. There's so many different options that you can dive into. There's a lot on offer there, community nursing as well. That's a big one. And also with COVID, vaccine clinics, they're popping up everywhere. So that's another area you can go into. Kamnara's got an amazing vaccine clinic at the moment and testing clinic that's always needing to be staffed. We're always flying up Perth nurses to come and staff the vaccine clinic and the COVID testing clinic and things like that. So, those nurses are having a sub time working Monday to Friday, vaccinating everyone and then having the weekend off to go exploring. So, that's rural and remote. That's wonderful.
Yeah, very cool. I guess the negative has been that WA has had their borders closed for so long that no one else could get in.
That's right. We cheered everyone. So they need to start coming back in and, give us a hand.
I know. I really want to go to Rottnest Island.
Yeah, that's a beautiful spot. It's amazing out there.
I know.
Yeah, definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, WA looks beautiful. And just in general, I think it's, it'd be just, as I mentioned earlier, such just a cool opportunity to just travel around and see because I suppose, for myself, I haven't really sort of explored too much apart from sort of big cities like Sydney, Gold Coast, Noosa, and, haven't really gone any further than that really. So there's so much out there.
There is, and you've got plenty of time.
How do you find working, in a community? Is there a lot of, Indigenous Aboriginal people, and how is that sort of work with the cultural differences? And I guess we sort of learn at university that they're sort of resistive to sometimes, Western, care and things like that, and trusting clinicians based on previous trauma and everything that's occurred.
Yeah, we have quite a large Indigenous population in Kununurra. And a majority of our presentations to emergency are Indigenous. And I think not so much resistance. I think the access to healthcare can be really limited in rural places. So. Mm-hmm. Or remote places. So Kununurra, there's a lot of remote communities surrounding Kununurra. So we actually fly out clinic planes to these places and they send out doctors. So our doctors that work at the hospital do clinics out there, for a couple of days at a time and then come back in and fly out the following week and things like that. So sometimes they're just the clinics out there are operated by vans, so rural area nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Remote area nurses. So that's the access that they have out there. They don't have the luxuries of having physio and OT, dietitians and things like that, available to them all the time. But the services, the main hospital will fly out those clinicians to go see them and things like that. And they love doing that. All the staff that fly out there, they really enjoy getting to know the Indigenous community. They have a really good time getting to know them and having fun with them and bringing them back on the plane if they're a bit crook. And, they're usually, very receptive to our help and very appreciative and grateful as well. So, yeah, it's something I haven't had the opportunity to do at this stage, but it would be nice to do that one day.
Amazing. Very good. I forgot to ask, what's an interesting patient presentation you've come across?
I think we covered that, didn't we, with snake bite.
Do you think snake bite's your favourite presentation?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That was really quite interesting, giving the anti-venom and watching that have its effect and everything. But I think, interesting presentations, but I've seen a few snake bites. I've only given anti-venom once, just that one time. But also, seeing STEMIs and giving thrombolysis and watching that work is pretty cool, like right in front of your eyes. Lots of motor vehicle accidents as well. So lots of trauma, we see that. Lots of boating and camping accidents as well, actually. So lots of campfire burns. So we're always in contact with the burns, with the burn specialists and wound care nurses in Perth, getting advice on burns, and sometimes we have to evacuate them out. RMDS are a great service to us, taking down to Perth for treatment and things like that. What else do we see? Lots of misdialysis as well, which is always a challenging one to try and fix, but lots of kids as well. Lots of bronchiolitis and administering high flow oxygen and things like that, and just watching kids improve, and I always find that very interesting and quite rewarding as well.
Yeah, mixed bag of everything.
Yeah, it is. It really is everything. But definitely lots of sort of camping, boating accidents, especially in the dry season when people are getting out and about. We get grey nomads come through Kununurra. And there's lots of people out having fun, out and about having fun, and unfortunately, people have accidents, like falling down waterfalls is fun that comes in.
I had this one patient who was abseiling in the Grampians and had to get airlifted out from the middle of it. I don't know, he was explaining it to me and I was like, oh, how did this work? And it was just such a random thing happen, and he the thing, whatever, the rope didn't work for him and he was stuck there. Lots of camping stuff would happen for you guys as well.
Definitely, all the time.
And finally, what would you say, any tips for anyone that's listening and is interested in pursuing a sort of similar area in the future? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, definitely, be prepared as best as you can for your ability. So if you think you really want to do emergency and you really want to get out there and try rural remote nursing, if you're working metro, get your skills behind you, do your postgrad if you can, but, you know, use your support networks like your education team that can help sort of guide you in the right direction, link you up with some courses. Like, there's so many, like, courses you can do, like trauma nursing courses and ALS courses and things like that. It's really good just to be prepared as best you can before you go out to rural and remote. It does help quite a lot. But also be willing, be adaptable, be open-minded and be flexible, because it is a big change from, like, metro, tertiary sort of area into the rural and remote setting. So, yeah.
Amazing. And I suppose, you know, just be open to any opportunity you come across, because, yeah, you know, it seems like every day would be different, and you'd also, you know, have a lot of more autonomy, sort of, I assume, in these areas compared to, you know, I don't know how many people are staffed on a particular ward, but you really would need to pull your, you know, minds all together and figure things out if, you know, the patient deteriorates really badly and, you know, there's not that necessarily a big met call team and all these different types of doctors that can rock up and let you know. It's a lot of nurses thinking quickly, I assume.
Yeah, it is. And, yeah, and we, you know, there's always doctors on site and doctors that can be called, and always an on-call roster, so there's always someone that can come in and help. That's what I found anyway.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
No worries.
Yeah, I think everyone would learn a lot from this episode, and, you know, it's very interesting and different to anyone else I've recorded an episode with. So so glad we did it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and good luck with your nursing career.
No worries. Thank you so much.
No worries. See you later.
Bye.